he me. I put the substance of our opinions into writing and sent it to him, subjoining a request that if I should see among the people of England any disposition to cultivate a better understanding between the two nations than had hitherto prevailed, how far I might be authorized to say that the same disposition prevailed on the part of France. He answered me by letter in the most unreserved manner, and that not for himself only, but for the minister with whose knowledge the letter was declared to be written. I put this letter into the hands of Mr. Burke almost 3 years ago, and left it with him, where it still remains, hoping, and at the same time naturally expecting, from the opinion I had conceived of him, that he would find some opportunity of making a good use of it, for the purpose of removing those errors and prejudices which two neighbouring nations, from the want of knowing each other, had entertained to the injury of both. When the French Revolution broke out, it certainly afforded to Mr. Burke an opportunity of doing some good had he been disposed to it, instead of which, no sooner did he see the old prejudices wearing away than he immediately began sowing the seeds of a new inveteracy, as if he were afraid that England and France would cease to be enemies. That there are men in all countries who get their living by war and by keeping up the quarrels of nations is as shocking as it's true. But when those who are concerned in the government of a country make it their study to sow discord and cultivate prejudices between nations, it becomes the more unpardonable. With respect to a paragraph in this work, alluding to Mr. Burke's having a pension, the report has been some time in circulation, at least 2 months, and as a person is often the last to hear what concerns him the most to know, I've mentioned it, that Mr. Burke may have an opportunity of contradicting the rumour, if he thinks proper. Thomas Paine. Rights of Man. Among the incivilities by which nations or individuals provoke and irritate each other, Mr. Burke's pamphlet on the French Revolution is an extraordinary instance. Neither the people of France nor the National Assembly were troubling themselves about the affairs of England or the English Parliament, and why Mr. Burke should commence an unprovoked attack upon them, both in Parliament and in public, is a conduct that can't be pardoned on the score of manners, nor justified on that of policy. There is scarcely an epithet of abuse to be found in the English language with which Mr. Burke has not loaded the French nation at the National Assembly. Everything which rancour, prejudice, ignorance, or knowledge could suggest are poured forth in the copious fury of near 400 pages. In the strain and on the plan Mr. Burke was writing, he might have written on to as many thousands. When the tongue or the pen is let loose in a frenzy of passion, it's the man and not the subject that becomes exhausted. Hitherto Mr. Burke has been mistaken and disappointed in the opinions he had formed of the affairs of France. But such is the ingenuity of his hope, or the malignancy of his despair, that it furnishes him with new pretences to go on. There was a time when it was impossible to make Mr. Burke believe there would be any revolution in France. His opinion then was that the French had neither spirit to undertake it nor fortitude to support it. And now that there is one, he seeks an escape by condemning it. Not sufficiently content with abusing the National Assembly, a great part of his work is taken up with abusing Dr. Price, one of the best-hearted men that lives, and the two societies in England known by the name of the Revolution Society and the Society for Constitutional Information. Dr. Price had preached a sermon on the 4th of November, 1789, being the anniversary of what's called in England the Revolution which took place 1688. Mr. Burke, speaking of this sermon, says, "The political divine proceeds dogmatically to assert